If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, Dad's hoarding car parts.
I just can't stop thinking about Puff the Vaping Dragon now, and what Puff the Vaping Dragon may or may not be like. Is that that's his street name?
Is this because I told you the story about my mate who came round and was trying to have a cheeky vape without my children noticing? And
yeah.
Then he came back into the garden.
Well,
and
yeah.
It looked like his head was on fire. But they didn't notice, thankfully, because I was going to go, oh, no, don't worry about him. He's a dragon.
Well,
a vaping dragon.
It's a far less successful way of disguising smoke than in the old days of the ember shielding,
yeah.
As we both have talked about before. You know, you're smoking inside the hand.
Yes.
And you're just putting the hand up to the mouth very briefly, and then you're side exiting like a
Dodge Viper.
Yeah, like a Dodge Viper. You're forcing the smoke out of the side at a quite acute angle. I'm doing it as I'm talking to you, like that. And then the kids are all, because it's a party atmosphere, so the kids aren't really fixating on the subject, and it's all fine. And because he's shielding constant. I say he, it could be a lady. I can't remember the last lady I saw shielding an ember.
I don't think I've ever seen a woman
ember
smoking
shield.
A tab in the accepted shieldy way. I really don't think I have.
Maybe it is just a gender specific style.
Shield it.
It's the crafty shielding. And my uncle used to go into the garage to, like, I don't know, arrange the paint pots or something, and used to come out like a scene from Tonight, Matthew. I'm going to be Elvis Presley. I'm sorry, Tonight, Matthew. I'm going to be Benson and Hedges.
Welcome. What a wonderful show we've got for you tonight, because it's a John Player special.
Oh yes, it's Saturday night John Player special. And when we all realised what he was doing, I'd go in there because I knew he had loads of car parts. So he'd come out like, Tonight Matthew, I'm going to be, and he'd come out and go, oh look, I got a Triumph 2000 alternator. I completely forgot, I haven't owned a Triumph 2000 since 1983. Oh, that's really cool. And this was pre eBay, so those parts, I don't know, might have got weighed in. I don't know.
Or just put back.
or just put back.
Where they came from.
Yeah.
Well, I might need that. Why would you need that?
You don't need it. You know, my dad's still got bits for our old family cars that we don't own. You know that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's super dad behaviour, isn't it?
That is extreme dad.
When we cleared out our old family home when my dad was moving, I was just, the garage was awash with stuff, and we had a skip, and I was just clearing stuff out because we had to get it moved because Dad was moving into a much smaller place. Mm-hmm. And in the back of the overhead cupboards in the garage, right at the back, there was a little box, like a cube cardboard box with BMC branding on it.
Oh.
And I looked inside, and it had the dashboard switch for a 1960s Mini in it.
Wow.
Lovely little thing. And I went, Dad, why was there a switch for a 1960s Mini in the back of the cupboard? You haven't owned a Mini for 40 plus years. And he went, yeah, that's why it was at the back.
He's a man of logic, Rich.
Well, the worst thing is, as well, because the apple doesn't fall far from the tree and the Mini switch doesn't go away, I thought it was such a lovely box and such a nice switch within it. Although they're probably, I mean, you probably get a few quid for them, can't you? Because it's
60s. Yeah.
But I kept it, and it's now on top of a bookcase in my office because I couldn't bear to throw it away and I didn't want to sell it. But yeah, my dad had kept, and he'd got he got Haynes manuals, obviously, for cars that are long gone,
yeah.
And a service. My dad was an engineer, so he had quite a logical brain, though not logical enough to throw away bits he didn't need. But he, I think it's that sort of wartime mentality almost. You know, people of
it's complete,
my parents'
yeah.
generation, it was instilled into them. My dad was born just before the Second World War, so he'd sort of grown up with make, do and mend. And I think that attitude extended into the 50s, didn't it? Because there was still rationing and people didn't have a lot of
Oh, 50s
stuff.
Was tight, yeah, in Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, 50s was very sort of light grey, wasn't it?
It was a bit light grey. When you look at it compared to what happened in the 60s, it was starkly different.
Yeah, we sort of, you know how our memories of the past, or our virtual memories of eras in which we didn't live, are probably tempered a little bit by photos and footage we've seen of those eras. And so you sort of assume that everything pre the late 60s was black and white. And of course it wasn't. And when you see a colour photo or a colourised photo, it kind of scrambles your brain a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
But I genuinely feel like the 50s wasn't very colourful, even if you could see it in colour.
I think it was monochrome. I think everyone's eyes evolved in the 60s. It possibly could have been special tablets. And then everyone could see in colour all of a sudden.
It's on your tongue, mate. You'll see the colours.
And then all billboards had more colour in them.
Yeah. True story, though, that in the 50s, or maybe even the late 40s, but I think it was the 50s, Renault hired a famous French artist to revamp the colour palette that they offered on their cars, because they realised that basically all their cars were grey or a different grey or maybe black.
Black,
and they,
yeah.
they got this artist in, and she went, right, let's do yellow and blue and red, and that's how they sort of ushered in a new era of things being in colour. But, yeah, where were we? Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
One of the best things I found in our old garage as I was clearing it out a few years ago was this massive sheet of cardboard on which my dad had drawn up a service schedule for my mum's Vauxhall Chevette.
What? Well, how big was this
handy,
board?
It was...
Like A0?
No, I mean it wasn't super detailed. It was. I didn't have diagrams. It was just a chart. So it was basically, you know, sort of saying every. I mean, God, old cars needed more servicing, didn't they? So probably like every 5,000 miles, change the filters, and then
grease
every 10,000 miles. Yeah, that's it. I think it had some sort of, because my dad would always err on the side of caution, being an engineer. You know,
yeah. Mine too.
He'd like an oil change. But yeah, it was probably A3, and he'd drawn up a schedule.
My dad loved the grease gun on all the suspension points, because he said it's so much easier to keep them lubed than to replace them when they've worn out, because kingpins were notoriously a bastard to do.
But your dad was an engineer too, wasn't he? Or still is?
Yeah, he was. No, he's retired. He's long retired now. But yeah, he was a structural engineer. So he specialised in bridge structures and stuff like that. He was never into performance cars. I think we've had this chat before, but there's a photo somewhere that I've got to get a copy of, that on site when they were building the M5 motorway, which is why he ended up in the West Country from Leicestershire. They used Land Rovers, which would have been what, Series 2s, I think, but also a brace of Renault 4s.
Really?
Yeah, they'd bought one as a site car, and they realised that it's thin tyres and it's sort of lightweight. It could skitter across really muddy, boggy surfaces without needing much in the way of special tyres or whatever. So instead of investing in, you know, they were something like a quarter of the price of a Land Rover.
Oh, yeah.
So they decided to buy a whole gang of Renault 4s. And all they did is got the engineering department on site to make... Dad was saying they made new wishbones. They reinforced the front wishbones. So basically they turned them into shitty rally cars. The wishbones were triangulated and reinforced, and it had a sump guard put on the front. And he said people just used to drive them flat out across, like, really boggy surfaces. And one day Dad was on site on his own, and was doing a visit to check one of the bridge supports going in, and he was driving along quite quickly along kind of dirty gravelly road, and the road ended. No one had put the sign up to say they'd finished building that part of the road.
Oh my God.
And my dad did a proper kind of like, you know, cannonball run style. He went, it went off the road and dropped about 20 feet and just landed nose down in deep dirt, mud, Jesus. Dirt, silt. And yeah, destroyed the car, I think. And he's got a photo. He's got a black and white photo because he had his camera with him for surveying.
Yeah,
he just got out and took a photo of it. And it's a very sad sight. But he still maintains. He said there was one group of people on site who were always like, no, it's a Land Rover or nothing. Only a Land Rover will do. And then there's the other school of thought was, well, hang on, Land Rovers get bogged down sometimes because they're too heavy. Once their axles get buried, they're out. So they go for the scuttlebug approach with the Renault 4s. And I think they did the same with later on in life. They might have got some Suzuki SJs, actually.
Well, even that feels like cheating because they're jacked up.
They're jacked up.
Separate chassis, yeah. Four-wheel drive. It's like, but taking a front-wheel drive car.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about this, actually, last week, after we talked about the Ineos Grenadier in the last show, and I noticed
you've got to say it. You say it in a much more colonial way.
Oh, sorry,
please.
Yeah. Ineos Grenadier.
Is it too early for a gin?
Go close to the mic.
In the Ineos Grenadier.
Grenadier.
Ready for all excursions, tourism, safari, bloody off-roading expeditions, that sort of thing, you know, when I used to go to Tibet in the 1950s. Of course, things were very different back then, and sorry, I'm very...
This is not an office. I had some breakfast, Jen, you see. Anyway, I noticed that the Grenadier is now... It might be built in the old smart factory in France, so this new Pride of Britain 4x4 is, in fact, a Austrian-developed, French-made car with a German engine, potentially. Anyway, we won't get back to that.
I was a bit shocked there. That's not a great PR spin.
It's not, is it?
No.
Anyway, best of luck to them. But I was thinking about people rarely need as much off-road ability as they think they need from cars like that.
You know,
most people would sort of go, oh, I need a 4x4 because, we often go on holiday to a lovely little cottage and it's up a gravel track.
Oh, you
know, well, yeah. But quite honestly, a Ferrari F40 could probably make it up the track that you're describing. And it's, but I then set me thinking about where's the most incongruous place that you've seen a non-4x4 type car. And I remembered a story that TV's Jeremy Clarkson tells of going on a Range Rover event in the 80s up in the, I think, the Alps. And it was meant to show off, you know, how incredible the Range Rover is off-road still, even though it's become more luxurious and everything. And off they go over these mountains. And it is very rocky and quite challenging. And they get to the top of this sort of off-roading track. And there was a Citroen BX there.
A PX.
To the horror of Land Rover PR.
But that's fairly commonplace in rural France and Italy and actually Spain. You'll go somewhere very remote in your fully equipped car, and like you say, there's just a bloke with a singlet on in a Suzuki Alto, and he does it every day. And can you with no specialist equipment, and you're like, What normally do? Yeah, it's just not a problem, man.
Why have you got that really heavy, complicated four-wheel drive car? You don't need that. You should have got a Suzuki Alto. I think every one of those countries... Well, now, actually, I'm not sure every one of those countries does have its own mule car. You know, the one sort of workhorse. Because in Italy, traditionally, I would say, for the past 40 years, it's been the Panda four-wheel drive, or 4x4, call it what you will, the old Panda. And a little bit the new one, but it's almost a bit fancy. I guarantee you go to any part of rural Italy and there are old-school Panda 4x4s. And in France, it kind of was the Renault 4 and maybe a little bit of the 2CV. And then it became the Peugeot 205, I think.
Yeah, the 205 is any car that you see hanging around a vineyard a lot with random bits of wood hanging out the tailgate.
Yeah.
For doing, I don't know... repairs of trellises. What it's always a Peugeot 205. It is.
Always.
And the good thing about those is they're Golf as well, as they say in Somerset. They're Golf.
They're what?
Golf. They got Golf in them, aren't they?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Golf, galvanised body.
Oh, Golf.
Golf, Golf. Yeah, you got Golf.
Golf.
They got Golf.
So, are they galvanised?
They're Golf. Yeah, those and the 309s.
Were they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's why...
They are weirdly strong, aren't they? It's like...
They're very strong.
I know two people who've had massive accidents in 205s and walked away without serious injury. One of them, a mate of mine, came off a rural Welsh road at a bend and down into a field, rolling like a mother, sliced a telegraph pole in two.
What?
And came to rest in a sort of ball of twisted metal in his 205 back in the 90s. And he just got out. He got out and was later presented with an enormous bill from British Telecom for slicing one of their telegraph poles in half. But the 205 took it, you know. And it's like, and I know someone else with quite a serious shunt in the 205 and just walked away. It's like everything,
they were good.
All the trimmings, they were the absolute quintessential French car in that all the trimmings seemed a little flimsy and rattly.
Yeah.
But the hull was strong.
The hull was strong. It was strong. And also pretty impressive selection of engines, actually. I mean, the 205, I know lots of people say it's probably one of Peugeot's kind of masterstrokes in motorsport and in utilitarianism, but yeah, they were galvanized. So that was the era when lots of people were still taking the piss out of French cars for being flimsy, but the 205 was anything but. The Renault 5 was flimsy by comparison, I would say.
Mm.
And the Renault 5 wasn't galvanized.
All the evidence you need.
I just keep thinking of Chemical Brothers song every time I say galvanised. That's the problem.
All the evidence you need is in the French countryside, isn't it? It's a wash to this day, as far as I can work out. Hey, do you know another weirdly strong French car that sort of lived longer than people might expect, I think, was the Citroën Xantia.
Oh, I like the Xantia.
Yeah, I like the Xantia. And actually the ZX.
I like the ZX. I got time.
The ZX was sort of, and maybe even the Zara. They just felt, it's a weird era of French cars. Where
you've driven an XM or whatever they are.
An XM? No, I've never driven an XM. I've driven all the others.
I could see you with one of those. If you ever
an XM?
If you ever got a second home, that would, I can imagine you. I can imagine you and Mrs. Porter in a really highly appointed XM.
You see, if I had a second home in France, I think it's like, you know, we'd move in and go, right, there we go, that's go there. Okay, oh, we've got some bread and cheese and wine. I think we're all set for the evening. I'm just going to pop out and buy an old 205, dear.
Oh, you'd
I
have
think
to.
I'd have to.
Yeah,
just
you
have to blend in, but also I think I'd enjoy it because they are quite fun to drive, aren't they?
They are good fun to drive. Here's a question. Mahari or Moke?
Ooh.
If you had to.
Well, now, I don't believe that Mokes are particularly good at driving down gravel tracks and things. But they're probably quite amusing, aren't they?
I just don't believe Mokes are very good. I've never gelled with them. They don't quite look right. The ground clearance is too low because the A-Series is just stupidly tall engine.
Well, I mean, vulnerable. Hang on, don't be mean on the A-Series. It's not a stupidly tall engine. It's just that someone decided to put the gearbox in the sump.
Well, it's just a rubbish idea. You know how I... Listen, I've got to keep the prejudice up as a Beetle owner.
I forgot about that.
You've got to.
So my instinct is sort of, funnily enough, drawn to the Mahari, which is odd, because I like minis, but I like TCVs. There's only one way to settle this.
Fight!
Do you know what? We went on a family holiday to France in the late 80s. Might have been like sort of 1987 or 88. And I used to... Please tell me that you did this as well. If we would go to a foreign country...
Well, I've never been to a foreign country with my parents.
Ever?
No. My parents haven't been abroad since 1974.
You're joking.
No, I'm not joking. I mean, we've never been on a family holiday to a foreign country as a family, ever. I've never seen my parents outside of England.
I feel like a bit of a ponce now for saying, well, of course, when one went on a foreign holiday.
No, honestly, it's true. I know, but
lots of people did used to just go on holiday in Britain, didn't they? They still do, I guess. But it's like, yeah, we used to go, you know, abroad. But when we go to a foreign place, I would ask my parents if we could call into some local car dealers so I could get some local brochures.
Oh, of course you did. That's so you.
Hang on a minute. I know when this French holiday was that I'm talking about now because...
You remember the brochures.
Buckle up. This is a big one. We had a Talbot Solara at the time.
And of course, Talbot had since fizzled out while we had that car. And I knew my parents were thinking about getting a new car. And I also knew that they'd sort of become Talbot loyalists and that loyalty would probably bounce into
Peugeot
loyalty.
Yeah, of
and
course.
The Peugeot 405 had just been released, but not in the UK. It hadn't arrived in the UK yet.
Oh.
And that would have been 87, I guess. Summer 87.
Yeah.
And it was in French showrooms, and we drove past a Peugeot showroom in Normandy or Brittany or wherever we were on holiday. And it was quite near the house where we were staying. And so one day I asked my parents if we could call into the showroom and go and look at the 405. And they said yes.
Oh, Rich, that's so sweet.
And we talked to the salesman in bad French about it. And, oh, c'est la voiture très bonne, n'est-ce pas? Oui. And,
You just spoke English loudly and slowly,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Now, tell me more about this car. And I got a French 405 brochure and then spent the rest of the holiday poring over it, trying to decode, you know, the equipment levels and stuff like that. And, qu'est-ce que c'est les mirrors électriques dont GR et upwards? But at the same time, I went to a Citroën, I think it might have been a Citroën garage next door, and we went in there to go and get some brochures because I was still a bit obsessed with 2CVs, and you could still buy a new 2CV at that point.
Of course
and
you could,
And then was amazed to find that in the French Citroën range, they still had the Mahari.
Yeah.
It was still around in the mid to late 80s.
Well, I think because there was enough kind of hot parts of France and seaside or yachty bits of France where that's where they were king. And of course they're glass fiber, aren't they, the Mahari?
Are they?
I'm pretty sure the Mahari's glass fiber with the steel floor pan with the 2CV floor pan. So actually,
well, I guess yeah, because a 2CV sort of pan could be
2CV pan,
couldn't it?
Yeah, and of course you can now replace floor pans with Golf 2CV pans, Golf noise, and that's why I like the Mahari because 'tis glass fibrier with that lovely bikini roof. I think they look great. It's them or beach buggies for me. Mokes can do one.
Yeah,
I mean it's got the prisoner thing going for it, which is very cool. Port Merion. I'd like to drive to Port Merion in a mini moke one day, just for cliche's sake. In fact, maybe you and I could do it together. Should we do that? That could be our little holiday.
You see, that's the thing. I don't have any interest in a moke in the UK. It just looks drafty to me. But I would love. I can imagine being like in Bermuda or something, and zooming about in a moke. I'd be quite happy doing that. But then,
yeah, I know what you mean. So you don't want to come to North Wales with me in a moke with no sides?
Going to say Bermuda still, but I see now beach buggies. Here's a weird one because I don't like beetles very much, as you know.
No.
But I did drive a beach buggy in Norfolk, in fact, so not anywhere hot and exotic. But I
very
drove a beach
hot.
Buggy a few years ago, and I did find it quite good fun.
Beach buggies are a marvellous thing. I mean, that's why those iconic cars like the 2CV and the Beetle. That's why almost one of the reasons why they became iconic because of the diversity. You can create something that's, you know, a war machine, and you can create something that's a leisure machine, and you can create something that helps farmers, and it's just brilliant. I think the beach buggy is a fantastic car. I've tried to justify why I should buy and build a beach buggy so many times, and my friend who doesn't live that far from here builds, he moulds them, and sells the kits. Yeah,
are they Manx replicas?
They are Mayor Manx replicas, and of course you'll do them in any kind of colour you want. I mean the colour palette's just amazing. Do you want metal flake magenta with gold sprinkles? Yes, actually, I think I would. I absolutely, because the more outrageous the better, I think, with those sorts of things. Because there's some really cool pictures of old buggies. The one that Jimi Hendrix had a beach buggy, and like no one looks cooler in a beach buggy than Jimi Hendrix. Oh, maybe Steve McQueen, but Steve McQueen never smiles.
Yeah, but I mean,
so
let's be honest. I think Jimi Hendrix could be in a Deu Espero and still look pretty cool. So it's not that, you know, he's really just sort of gilding the coolness by being in a beach buggy.
Yeah,
I realise I've been in a beach buggy more recently than the one that I drove in Norfolk because TV's James May got the beach buggy that he had built for a Grand Tour special. When they went to Namibia, and
he had it
brought back to the UK and fixed up, and he has it as a
Oh, he still owns
his
it.
Cars. Yeah, and when it arrived, it was fixed up by the guys who'd built it for him and delivered to the office. And he and I went for a little zoom round the block in where our office was in Chiswick on a slightly drizzly day. And it was amusing, but not that amusing. Also, it stank of petrol, and I find it very hard to relax in a car that smells strongly of petrol. So. call me picky.
What, and yet you really like Daimler double sixes?
Yeah, well, no. Yeah, okay. they don't. I mean, I think they probably smell of petrol in the way that an alcoholic smells of booze. You know, it's just like they smell of it because they consume so much of it.
They just use it. Yeah, I'm using it constantly.
I've looked on Car and Classic, and there are two Maharis for sale, and I'm staggered at how expensive they are. They're both 70s ones.
They're ridiculous. They're ridiculous.
Yeah, money. I had no idea.
Yeah.
One is a 1973 Citroën Mahari, fully restored.
Golf chassis.
It's got a Pete Sparrow BMW motorcycle engine conversion, making 90 horsepower. Well, that's just too much, isn't it?
That's a shed load. For Christ's sake. Probably weighs about 200 kilos.
Yeah. The other one, well, by the way, that 73 Mahari with a motorbike engine and 90 horsepower is 15 grand.
Yeah.
There's a 1972 Mahari, fully rebuilt with a new body. I love it when adverts say things like this. It says 1972 Mahari rebuilt over the last 2 years. This car is like new, almost too good to use.
I'll be the judge of that.
Just
did you see that? By the way, did you see that 70s 911, which is in auction right now with 580 miles on the clock? Original?
No.
Yeah, I saw it. It was on. I couldn't believe it. It's orange. It's a Targa. I think it's an early 70s 911 Targa. It's done 580 miles from new.
Bloody hell.
It's a total time capsule car.
Trouble is, though, I don't want that because it's like 911s, they're built to be used. It feels like that'll just be... I mean, I'm sure you could recommission it, but it's just like, why did no one drive it? It's just stupid. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
The problem with cars that are really low mileage like that, like hyper low mileage, is you can't really use them because the entire value of it,
yes,
is the fact that it's done such a stupidly low... Because I nearly bought a Granada once that was very minorly fire damaged, but it had done 129 miles from new.
Oh, my God.
So
hang on. Sorry, just... You distracted me with the low mileage, but I realised I'd glossed past the fact that you said fire damaged.
It was... sorry, I think there's a military aircraft going over my house. Hang on.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus... Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Oh, it's okay. It's not that loud. Yeah, I found it on eBay. Mark 1 Granada, 2 litre Pinto manual in that lovely green, like the one I used to have. It had been stored in a warehouse from new by a dealer, and the warehouse next door had caught fire, and it had got some singe damage. So not proper fire damage, but singe damage. So the rear lights were melted, some of the paint on the boot lid was, and the parcel shelf and the rear window rubber had melted. But it had 129 miles on the clock. I mean, it still had all the labels and the engine bay of, like, the ones you get, you know, with the elastic bands and the tags.
Mm.
It still had all of that. I mean, it was spooky. And I tried to buy it, and couldn't quite agree on a price. But also in hindsight, I was like, but the thing is if I bought it and put new lights on it and did the paint repair on the boot, I've got a 129-mile Mark I Granada. What am I ever going to do with it? Am I going to just slowly put miles on it, or am I just going to sit and look at it?
That's the problem, isn't it? That you're right. That a car like that becomes defined by its freakishly low mileage.
Yeah,
and so
it does.
It just, it's like, I mean, they become like sort of circus freaks, don't they? Because
yeah,
then it's in your interest, you know, sort of a grown person who looks like a child, you as the circus owner then have to try and maintain this.
It's a bit like when Aled Jones's voice broke. There was no longer any interest in him.
He lost his USP, didn't he?
He did lose his USP, and I think it's a shame, but it's kind of the truth.
Aled Jones, the low mileage Granada.
If you bought that 911 with 580 miles on the clock and you didn't own like a glass case style beautiful showroom, or I don't know, you didn't have it in the middle of your lounge, and you thought, I'm going to put a couple of hundred miles on it every month, soon that would be a 2,500 mile car, which is still ultra low, but everyone would remember it as the 580 mile Porsche.
Yeah.
So where does it end, Richard?
Well, it ends with that car never being used ever, and then that's a complete waste of a car.
It's entombed.
Yeah.
But you know what? In other news, I was thinking the other day, do you think Vin Diesel is going to get banned from inner city areas?
No,
because
is he Euro 6
compliant?
He's going to be fitted with various filters. It'll be fine.
Do you think if he has to do a red carpet event in London, he's got to have all kinds of strangulation equipment? He's got to have some sort of veil over his mouth.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Or is he going to invent a new energy drink called AdBlue?
Yeah, and, he just keeps swigging from is actually piss to clean up his emissions.
On the one hand, he's got protein shakes and, I don't know, blue steaks being consumed, and on the other hand, he's trying to just drown it all with a specialist drink that allows him to walk around city areas.
It's very confusing for a lot of people, because for years they were told that the best movie star for them was Vin Diesel. And now it's like they feel like that Vin Diesel is being taxed quite heavily.
They
don't know what to do. But of course, for a lot of film watchers, Vin Diesel is still the most economical way to enjoy a extremely muscular bald man who whispers a lot.
He has got quite a husky voice. I'm wondering if it's due to emissions, because the larynx is a little dry. Do you not think? I think his particulates, he's getting a little bit claggy with age.
Do you think he needs his filter cleaning out? We should find out if his check engine light has come on.
Oh no, he's gone into limp home mode during several productions, and the insurance payout's been ridiculous, because they're halfway through a production and Vin's like, I can't do anything at normal speed at the moment, you're just gonna have to bear with me, I'm a bit clogged up. Well, there's somebody that I we both know in the industry that I do work with here and there, mm-hmm. and who refers to white wine as lady petrol, and I thought, Vin Diesel needs to diversify. Vin's Yard, right, could be his wine label, and he could do Vin's Lady.
Hang on. You're walking what? Right past an open goal here.
Vin's Yard.
Van du Vin.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Vin Blank and Vin Rouge.
Yeah, exactly. Or Vin's Lady Petrol. It's like he's offsetting his dieselness by selling lady petrol.
I don't know what you're saying.
I was up late last night.
Were you?
I was up late. Yeah, I was up late, really, really.
Have you had a bit of coffee this morning?
Not enough, unfortunately. We're running a little bit low, and luckily, because this is a podcast, you can't see my eyes, but they're a bit stingy and small. But yeah,
Van de Vin.
So it's not about. It's about. I want Vin Diesel to come out in a new film called Euro 6. I just want his latest film to be called Euro 7 or Euro 6. What are we on right now for Diesels? It is Euro 6, to
yeah. Yeah. One man's struggle to be allowed into city centres.
He's like, you've got to let me back into the centre of Paris. Give me my freedom. Let me just walk in.
Ends up disguising himself as a 20-year-old petrol-powered Renault Twingo with severe panel damage throughout to get into Paris in order to save his daughter or something. I don't know. There's a premise for the film. Vin Diesel is a man who needs to go and save his daughter from the centre of a major European city, but can't because he's banned on account of his emissions.
There we go. And that's what it's about. He's got so many opportunities. Does he disguise himself? Does he invent an energy drink that just happens to be blue that helps his gut? Oh, there's another thing that's really... It's an ongoing issue that's been bugging me.
Mm-hmm.
And we did... Someone brought this up on social media recently, and I feel like we've got to revisit it for the podcast.
By the way, because people keep bringing things up on social media, and I keep forgetting. I need to start writing things down, because there have been some questions.
Tell me about it.
I'll tell you another good one, just before I forget, because I just looked at this a few days ago. Someone in our the YouTube comments for one of our podcasts, the last one, actually, about the Ineos Grenadier, said, you've got to look at this footage of the 1970s version of a Grenadier, which was the Landmaster, and I'd completely forgotten about this.
The Landmaster?
Yeah, and it was this... It was made in the West Country. It was like in Cornwall or Devon or somewhere. And it was another obvious sort of defender, although they weren't defenders in those days, sort of lookalike. And they only made like three of them or something. I think it had an American ladder chassis and it looked very like Land Rover Series lookalikey. The Landmaster.
I've never heard of that.
And there's one for sale. Like, bear in mind, they sold a handful. There's one on eBay at the moment.
I need to investigate this because I had no idea that it even existed.
Yeah, it was created in the 70s, but I saw this and I was like, now, I've seen these before. I have a feeling this was one of those ones where its technical production life was about 10 or 12 years, but they only made three. It was because I'm sure it was still around in the 80s because I think I saw it in an 80s car magazine. And sure enough, this one that's on eBay appears to be B-Reg, so it's 84. An 85.
Yeah,
84, 85. So
do you need, I think Landwind, Chinese company Landwind, should buy the company outright and then could just have the Landmaster, the Landwind Landmaster.
I sort of feel like Landwind, if they wanted to call something Landmaster, wouldn't buy the company, they'd just crack on.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, what were you saying about social media questions?
Oh, yeah, what was I talking about? Lyrics in a lot of modern rap and grime at the moment, referring to Range Rovers as Rovers.
Yeah, it's endlessly amusing, isn't it?
I just feel like somebody needs to draw their attention to the fact that it doesn't work, because as soon as you shorten it, it becomes a totally different vehicle. And in some cases, deeply embarrassing. But as someone like you and I, who are car weirdos, maybe of a certain age, I just can't stop thinking about... I mean, there's a track out right now called Rover by Simba featuring DTG.
What, it's actually called Rover?
It's called Rover. And he just talks about his Range Rover Sport, basically. And
how do you know it's a sport?
I tell you why. Wait there. I'm going to bring the lyrics up because I found the lyrics because I was
Is
bored.
It because he makes reference to the style of gear selector that it has, and it's the sporty Jaguar F-Type one rather than the...
It's the rotary
one. It's the rotary one. That's a full-size Range Rover then, isn't it? But it's also a weird thing to get bogged down in a lyric. But
well, here we go. So this is called... Yeah, this is Simba, and he spells... instead of an I, it's a one, like a number plate. And on the cover of his of the single, it is him in a... I think that's actually it could be a Range Rover SVR, a white SVR.
Okay.
But it's Simba featuring DTG, who just sounds like a made-up gearbox.
Yeah.
But he's... I mean, there's some... He's from Swindon, apparently. I didn't even know that. I've just found that out, yeah.
Because it's one thing... Because this Rover thing, it's like Americans have called Range Rovers Rovers for years because they've forgotten about Rover. But it's... And it's one thing for an American artist to do that because they don't know any better. But for a UK artist... I mean, yeah, I say that, but obviously
There's quite a few at the moment.
You could legitimately have a recording career now and not really remember Rover because they disappeared in 2005. It's like if you're 18, Rover ceased to exist when you were three. So why?
Who cares?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, this doesn't even impinge on you. But
you might catch me in a 4x4. That's a Clover. You might catch me in a Rover. Yeah, or you might catch me on my Motorola. How many Motorolas exist these days?
That's just stupid. That's just What else rhymes? Grover from Sesame Street. No,
Grover. Grover's good. Yeah, Shorty said she coming with her brethrens because she saw a young something rude word pull up in a Rover. Now she says she want to come over. Yeah, but I don't want no love. I just want to make the moolah la. Yeah, the moolah. I just want to make the moolah. Got them all screaming, oh la la. Yeah.
And Shorty, you know, they look like my kind of chicks because I saw she'd got a 216.
Well, exactly. 16 Volve.
Got something in my pants. You think she can guess? Gonna take a ride in her 820 Vitesse.
See, there you go. Immediately, I'm in. We could do this. I'm not just pointing the finger at Simba. There are other artists referring to Range Rovers as just Rovers.
The one that I first noticed was a few years ago. Do you remember that track Closer by the Chainsmokers? Which was the baby pull me closer in the backseat of your Rover. And it was like, backseat of your Rover? What was it? Like a 420 GSI.
That I know you can't afford, bite that tattoo on my shoulder. What, that you can't afford? We go, hang on, if I bought a really clean 420 now, what would it be? 700 quid?
Yeah.
800 quid?
Yeah.
You can't afford that?
I know.
How do you afford to run a car?
Yeah. How are you recording this song? I mean, it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
It also just reminded me that when we started making the Grand Tour for Amazon, someone from Amazon in the US was really keen for us to make some viral sort of teasers for the show involving other celebrities. And they were slightly obsessed with this. And they came to us one day and they went, oh, got some good news. I have a contact at management for the Chainsmokers. You may have heard of them. And we thought it'd be really funny to have the hosts talking to the Chainsmokers, because the irony is the Chainsmokers don't actually smoke, but the hosts do. And that'd be really funny. And we had to go, not all of the hosts smoke, and also that's not funny anyway. They were absolutely serious. It's kind of ironic the Chainsmokers don't actually smoke, but the hosts could pretend they think they do, and that's why they've got them in. And why would you do that?
Stop. You could have talked to them about the Rover. You could have had Jeremy pulling up in a 420 GSI.
Yeah.
And gone, look, I can afford this, and I'm going to make love to a woman in the back of it.
£670. Nightfire red, original alloys. The interior is a bit scruffy. Ironically, it does smell of smoke.
James May rolls up in a Metro Tahiti.
It's still a Rover.
What would Hammond pull up in?
I think he
would
may
he go
have
old
gone,
school.
He may have gone a bit old school. He'd have
liked P4.
Joe, he does like a vintagey sort of car. He might have gone P4. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see him with a nice clean P4 with the old fold down walnut tables in the back. Chain smokers are going to be all over that.
There was an old man who used to live on the same road as me growing up, who was not like the one on your road that you were talking about last week, because I don't think this guy was a heavy drinker, but he lived in
the faux colonel.
Yeah, but this guy lived in one of those old people houses where the front garden is sort of incredibly overgrown with massive trees that were probably saplings when they bought the place and have now sort of encroached so much there must be no natural light coming into the front window. So you know this kind of house I mean?
I know exactly it, and it would transform it if you had about 20 minutes with a chainsaw.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. Yeah. The old chap eventually died. Some people bought the house, and the first thing they did was they cut the trees right back, and it like transformed not just the house, but that bit of the road. But this old guy used to have a P4, and I've never driven a Rover P4, but my memory of that car is that there was a sort of gearbox noise they make. And
yeah, trans whine.
Yeah, it's not even a whine as such. It's not high pitched, it's sort of mid pitch. And I remember you just hear him setting off. It always sounded like those cars were incredibly low geared. Like
they were.
Like, imagine a sort of 21 speed mountain bike and you put it in one. And how much pedalling you have to do to move at anything more than a glacial pace. It felt to me like the Rover P4 had that sort of gearing. But it probably had a three-speed manual gearbox, didn't it? Maybe four. But
I think it might have been three-speed manual.
Maybe
yeah.
even three on a tree. And
yeah, it could have been.
Three on the tree. I'm not very good at those lingos. But yeah, and it was really sort of... and you go, it's still only doing 4 miles an hour. How is this possible?
But that was a quality Rover. You know, that was when Rover were actually quite fine motor cars.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The chain smokers could legitimately be blown away by that. If you got a mint P4 and you sat in the back with that beautiful kind of tucked leather and the walnut veneers, I think it would have a very nice kind of graceful smell to it. Probably quite a lot of petrol.
A graceful smell.
I don't know. A smell of grandeur. Could be a smell of grandeur. I'm thinking. I don't know. I feel like there should be some intervention with grime and rap artists referring to Range Rovers as Rovers. I just think it can't quite go on.
Yeah. It's not even opening up a lot of rhyming possibilities, is it? I was just trying to think.
You've just found out.
If they said rangy instead.
Mangy, obviously, is the mangy. First thing I think. Which is like, a badly kept dog.
Get up on him, my rangy. I'm sorry this coat smells mangy.
Well, I already prefer that to Rover.
Defender?
Yeah.
Opens up a bit more rhyming, I think.
Oh, so maybe when the new Defender is being wheeled out as we speak, isn't it? I've seen a couple of privately owned ones on the road. So do you think they're going to... Because I think you can shorten it to Def. Maybe Ender. Does anybody call the Land Rover an Ender? Probably not, but no. They might.
Well, do you know, Discovery is probably another obvious avenue because disco... But then I can't imagine many R&B artists or any kind of urban music singer, performer wanting to be in a new shape Discovery. It's not quite setting the right tone, is it?
It would be Defender. It would be Murdered Out Defender or full fat SVR type territory, wouldn't it?
What if you were a very fiscally prudent urban music artist and you just had a Discovery Sport and the front wheel drive one as well, so because it's more economical?
Fiscally, what was that again? Fiscally what?
Fiscally prudent, you know, someone who's a bit sensible with money.
I love that, a prudent grime artist.
Yeah, like...
I love that, and instead of singing about just excessive expenditure, it's the opposite.
Yeah, still live with my parents because it saves me a lot of money.
Yeah, I've got like Martin Lawrence on speed dial from Money Saving Expert.
No, not Martin Lawrence. Martin.
Oh, sorry. What's his name?
Lewis, is it?
Martin Lewis. He might have Martin Lawrence on speed dial as well. He's from Bad Boys, isn't he? He might have heard from Martin Lawrence from Money Saving Expert. No, not really. Oh man.
Got a disco sport, got the dealer to throw in some bits, got Marty on speed dial with mortgage tips.
Oh yeah, there we go. You can do this. You can do this.
Fiscally
shit.
Fiscally prudence, probably just is his stage name. Fiscal prudence, or maybe that's the name of the album.
Fiscal prudence sounds really good.
Money Saver, spelled S-A-V-A, and his debut album, Fiscal Prudence. And it's just...
Oh, yeah, so he thinks, like, SVR stands for Saver, not a high-end Range Rover. Saver, yeah, Saver. So always goes, gets the reduced food late at night. So he'll run into M&S at about 8 p.m. He grabs himself really high-end dinner for a quarter of the price. Bang, there we go. The yellow label's on it. I'm in, I'm grabbing it, I'm out.
He's a very economical driver.
Oh, completely. Never uses kickdown on an auto box.
Slipstreaming coaches when I'm on long runs. Pay off my credit card bill as soon as it comes.
See, you've built this character already. You're in. This is working.
This shit writes itself.
Man, it was my 12th wedding anniversary last week, and had a bit of an argument that day. So I thought, I'm just going to go in the lounge and watch just one of those old films that I haven't seen for ages. And I watched, because I've been thinking about it, and I can't remember why I'd thought about it, but I watched 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. Wow, what a film.
Wait, please. It was your wedding anniversary. You had a row with your wife on your wedding anniversary, so you went and watched 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
On your own.
I did at night, yeah. But the problem was, because I thought she wasn't going to be coming in for a while, she came in about 15 minutes after it started and looked at him and went, what's this? Well, it's a film called 48 Hours. It's like what made Eddie Murphy famous before Beverly Hills Cop. She's like, it just looks rubbish and old. I went, no, it's really good. It's really funny. I mean, there's some racism in it, but if you ignore that, it's quite a good film. Anyway, we watched it. Well, I watched it. and the thing that I love about that film, apart from the fact Eddie Murphy's just on fire, is Nick Nolte, and it's so sweary, and he drives this Cadillac convertible that is so tortured throughout. I've never seen auto gearbox punishment like that he does in 48 Hours. We're talking full, like, neutral parking slams. Oh. We're talking, I mean, you'd hate it. It gets started up and ripped into D within about a thousandth of a second of the engine catching. I mean, it's really thrashed to pieces. I feel like you need to watch it.
I feel like...
Again.
I feel like I do. I tell you what, funnily enough, it's my wedding anniversary coming up, so I will engineer an argument with my wife on that day, and then I'll settle down to watch...
And, of course, there's a Porsche Speedster in it covered in dust, so it's worth watching it just for that, I feel.
Top movie tips there from Mark Smith Mode.
Oh, yeah, Mark's Kerr Mode, yeah, yeah. Sports mode, eco mode.
Mark sports mode.
No, it'd be eco mode, wouldn't it? You know,
Mark sports mode. Britain's jerkiest high rev holding film reviewer.
What
did you think of the movie, Mark?
Well, I thought it was very good. Change up. Why are you speaking? I can't. I'm sports mode.
I'm ready for any throttle inputs that you're going to put in. I'm ready. I'm always ready, like a police driver.
All right. Well, anyway, it's probably time to wrap this up. We are here every Monday morning. Join us again next time. We'll find out if Johnny's marriage has survived another argument after which he sat down to watch, I don't know, Coming to America or something.
Well, no, I'm going to watch another 48 Hours.
Of course, there's a sequel. there's rows to spare.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, in the meantime, thank you for listening to Smith & Sniff, the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you feel like it. And also watch Johnny's Car Pervert YouTube channel, where he does excellent solo things. And if you really are desperate, go to Amazon and you can buy the medium-sized book of boring car trivia, which is something I wrote during lockdown to stave off boredom and insanity.
I think you've surmised it all fantastically there, Rich.
I don't feel like I'm getting any better at these, but anyway, there we go.
If anyone has any subjects that you have a burning desire for us to cover in Smith & Sniff, please comment on either the YouTube video or on social media, and we will try and just witter on about it if we can.
We're both on Twitter. Johnny is at Car Pervert. I'm at Sniff Petrol. And that handle is yours across social media, isn't it?
Social media.
So please, anytime you feel like it, post your social media questions and we will probably forget to answer them. But you never know. Give it a try. You can find out next week. Until then, thank you for listening. Bye.
Goodbye.
Social media.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.